Last week in San Francisco, we had a chance to interview two activists from Mexico City about the question of solidarity and its relation to Zapatismo. Guiomar Rovira is author of several books, including Mujeres de Maíz and Zapatistas Sin Fronteras. Mariana Mora is one of the editors of the new book Luchas Muy Otras, Zapatismo y Autonomía en las Comunidades Indígenas de Chiapas.
My name is Guiomar Rovira. I am a professor in the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana at the Xochimilco campus. So my relation to Zapatismo is, well, I have done journalism for many years in Chiapas, but I don't consider myself to be simply a journalist or academic. I'm also an activist. I come from the Catalonian libertarian anarchist tradition, and I found a profound resonance with my political imaginary in Chiapas. Over many years, I've been going there. I think that's probably enough of an introduction. Now I live in Mexico City.
My name is Mariana Mora. I'm a researcher and professor at CSS in Mexico City, which is the Center for Research and Advanced Studies in Social Anthropology. Like Guiomar, I've spent many years living in Chiapas collaborating, primarily in popular education workshops in autonomous municipalities, and then later doing work for my PhD fieldwork.
For me, the key to solidarity is not to think of it as a relationship of someone giving something to another who doesn't have anything. Solidarity forms the basis for a political articulation between us, understanding that the other is you. That is the foundation of solidarity and the possibility of action, concentrating on the possibility of defending ourselves together. So, solidarity for me is the capacity to articulate solutions, answers collectively, in order to defend ourselves against attacks from the system, attacks from the state, and the creative capacity to organize ourselves and exchange and create something that doesn't yet exist. Solidarity, then, is the foundation of political articulation, the foundational capacity to have, truthfully, a political impact, a political rupture. Without this kind of solidarity, this kind of support, this kind of camaraderie or compañerismo, because we could just call it this, you know, share the bread, comrade. Without this, it is impossible. Isolated from one another, we are not capable. We won't have the strength necessary to be able to change anything or change a situation of injustice. On the other hand, if we work to come to a consensus, to come to an agreement between us, that there exist situations of injustice or that there are concrete things that we have to do collectively, that is where the potential lies. A synonym of solidarity could be the potential for collective action, and one day it will extend itself beyond the local context. It's vital to create these local networks, but at the same time, the capacity to create articulations at an international and global level is fundamental today. So what connects us? What is this link? Well, it's political position. For me, this is obvious. It's an emancipatory politics. To be in favor of emancipation of women, of our communities, of minorities, of whoever, no?
I think one can construct solidarity in a liberal sense, as you were mentioning, Guiomar, which is really guilt cleansing and to always look outside. What helps me understand my definition is what are those reference points that are opposite of what I think? So one of those reference points is when you see the other as someone totally different from you. I see this in the liberal sense of what solidarity means, which is to help those poor people, those who need help, and now I feel better about myself because I've helped them out. My definition of liberal solidarity is pretty simplified, but there it is. And the other way to see solidarity is when one looks for a common platform. Therefore, one is a view extreme difference, and the other is a view that erases differences between everybody and says, we are all oppressed, we're all the same. For me, those two poles mark a situation where power inequalities are generated and reproduced, and that breaks really with what I think solidarity is. So for me, solidarity really happens in these spaces of identification with the other, which can be ephemeral. And this identification doesn't have to be because there are points in common or because we know each other, therefore we're the same. Rather, it's because there's identification in an affective space. It can be something that Raquel Gutierrez once said at the Casa de Ondas in Mexico City. You know, she said that she wants to break with this ideological solidarity of politics and of logic and instead work from the solidarity that comes from the gut. This is what an affective solidarity is. This could also be something that comes from the body that I identify as support. And it can be a moment of contact and later work in difference. But it's exactly the solidarity that is sort of a give and take, you know, a process through which we encounter ourselves in common and also work from our differences. I think this recognition of issues and articulations between economic exploitation, which we're all victims of, and this colonial legacy that also affects people in the countries that did and do the colonizing. But we have to recognize the resistance in the United States and in Europe, too, and not perpetuate this division. It's a way of rethinking the global South, really. So it's a connection between the economic aspect and also the difficulty of producing alternative forms of knowledge that are outside of this colonial legacy.
In this sense, where does solidarity come from? I think the recognition of this process, that the other is your mirror, and the pain of the other is your pain, and the injustice of the other is your injustice. So I don't know. It's human empathy. It's empathy. It's the capacity to empathize. It's the ability to feel that what causes the other to suffer is something that makes you suffer too. And it's the capacity of indignation that this produces as political passion.
Yeah, I think this affective aspect could be thought of as political passion. So rather than separate relations of solidarity from the political and ideological and the ethical and affective dimensions of solidarity, really better yet, what Zapatismo has taught me is that the lines between these dimensions aren't that clear. They're actually really blurry, and the political comes from the ethical, and it comes from these affective links, from this political passion, and you can't separate them. In the moment when they're not separated, these three words as concepts, I think we can break with this idea of solidarity as simply, I am in solidarity with you because we are resisting capitalism, which is a really narrow definition. That's where we can start imagining another form of solidarity.
Bueno, sí, o sea, digamos que el zapatismo es un momento, o sea, inaugural en el sentido de la posibilidad.
Zapatismo is an inaugural moment in the sense of the possibility of making global connections, global struggles, as an announcement of what would become the ultra-globalization movement and the networks we see today that go beyond local movements. Ways of linking movements, of creating movements, of movements. Zapatismo was able, from the most local site and from a condition of extreme marginalization in Chiapas, was able to create a global symbol, a symbol that connected global solidarity. The indigenous as the excluded of the world were at the same time affirming that we are all excluded. The struggle isn't just about land or rights in the Constitution or just about redistribution. It's also a cultural struggle and an economic struggle against free trade and also a global struggle for a change of mentality based on other knowledges, other civilizations, other ways of understanding the world. That's what's so critical about the cycle of struggles that begins with Zapatismo. And what it shows about the need to learn from others about their struggles, to become strong together with others, and at the same time to act in collaboration with others. In spite of geographic distance and cultural difference, we have something in common, and I think that is a basic element of solidarity, which is to defend life on Earth, to defend our lives, human life, instead of the life of capital or of money. Today, there's no local struggle that isn't also global. Every struggle interpolates the world while at the same time building and learning and being an example. This capacity for mirroring is really interesting. Struggles are mirrors for each other. They learn from each other and articulate with each other. This makes its political impact potentially enormous. We've seen how these movements can change political situations, but we still don't know to what extent this battle can be won. But it's a struggle for realizing other ways of understanding the world and of transforming consciousness. For me, then, the struggle is basically cultural, but it has bearing on the economic.
This mirroring that Guiomar mentioned is fundamental, precisely because it's not the kind of mirroring where I want to convert you into me, but rather it's a mirroring of words. For this reason, it's also the new production of words, which circulate and are transformed and touch down in different places. The circulation of genealogies of struggle is key. We can't underestimate the capacity to motivate and inspire and dream that the other can give you and that you too can give. I was just thinking about what happened a few weeks after Tahrir in January of last year when Wisconsin started to really heat up. So these kids from Egypt, you know, that were active in Tahrir, they sent 20 pizzas from Pizza Hut or something like that to the folks in Wisconsin. You know, these things are both support and criticism at the same time. The fact that they sent pizza, you know, food, is meaningful. But it's also a critique of U.S. imperialism in the context of everything that pizza represents. Pizza from Pizza Hut, you know, like fast food and so on. But at the same time, it was an act of solidarity, of support. So this simple message transmits many things. This back and forth of things as simple as sending something to eat, since they were holed up in the Capitol, you know? These actions are bridges, but they also become the media through which messages, images, and material support all circulate.
Dissemination, contamination, hybridity, everyone learning from everyone else, the contagiousness of enthusiasm, these are very important. Today, every movement, however remote or flawed it may be, inspires another and is named as an inspiration for another. So we see here the genealogies that converge, that watch each other, that create something new based on these convergences. It's like trial and error. What form does all of this take? For me, it's the network. These networks also have to be able to protect the movements against the offensive of everything that goes against them by means of media diffusion, of telling what's happening, of acting to create as much pressure as possible. The worst that can happen to these movements today is disarticulation, the incapacity to articulate or form collective responses. We are seeing this a lot in Mexico today. If movements can't form collective responses, they'll end up separated, dispersed, and they'll be criminalized one by one. This was the role that Zapatismo played for years, the articulating of struggles. Today we see that this articulation has disappeared in Mexico. It's emerged in other places through the contamination and dissemination of protests that we've been talking about. But at the same time, there is the risk that the network form makes everything very diffuse, very unstable. But these are laboratories of symbols, of ideas, of discourses. Who knows where they're headed? But what's interesting is that they're horizontal and collective. Hopefully, one kind of discourse or one part of the world doesn't predominate, but instead it takes the form of an assembly.
And I think that's the key right now, that there not be a nucleus, but also at the representative level, there are important questions. I'm thinking of some of the texts by Hart and Negri that were criticized a lot when the Occupy movement started in New York. You know, they were talking about the Plaza del Sol in Madrid, but they weren't talking about Tahrir Square. And so in some discursive spaces, the construction of a narrative about what's happening does have these sort of centralized nodes. But in reality, that's not what's really happening. Things are much more dispersed. So I think what's fundamental is the decentralization of that which is inspiring us in the current moment. And I think in Mexico, it's concentrated in two extremes. On one side, there's that inspiration of seeing what's happening in other places, of seeing what the students from the Iberoamericana University were doing last week, and that the UNAM students have joined. And that has resonance in the movements in Chile and in Egypt and Catalonia. And that's really about the circulation of inspiration. But in Mexico, we're also in a situation impacted by the circulation of pain, the circulation of really serious suffering. And there, I think the biggest challenge has to do with the question of how to understand this pain that's invading our country. While it certainly echoes broadly, there are also a lot of particularities to that pain. And I think the challenge we face is about not trying to fill that space of pain, assuming that it's all the same pain. But really, we have to recognize that the community of Cherán, or the indigenous communities across Mexico, or the Afro-Mexican communities in the coastal region, the pain felt there is human and universal, but it's also very particular and very distinct. So how do we work from that recognition? How do we work from that diversity of pain to find a way out of the situation we're living now? I think all of these questions really run parallel.
Pues a mí me parece que es muy interesante este nuevo resurgir, digamos, de la gente en las calles. En este caso,
for me, it is very interesting, this new emergence of people taking the streets. In this case of the young people in Mexico, it is very difficult right now. It is a time of electoral conjuncture. We have a country at war where there's over 50,000 people dead, 10,000 disappeared, hundreds displaced. And the young people who seemed outside of the discourse all of a sudden emerged during the visit of Peña Nieto to this small private Jesuit university. They did something I was amazed by, which was to remind him of what he had done at Atenco. Nobody had brought that up to him. Atenco is the town where he was responsible for the repression against the people, where 47 women were raped, 3 persons were assassinated, and many imprisoned and tortured. Nobody had brought up the fact that he was the governor of the state of Mexico when these atrocities happened. It was the young people of the Ibero that got riled up and got the media's attention. Though Televisa was saying that they were outsiders, and then they would play commercials of Peña Nieto that portray him as a listener of the students and crap like that. Then we see these young people make a video where they each show their student IDs of the Ibero and where they show they were against Peña Nieto. And this has a snowball effect. So all of a sudden, the social media networks are breaking down the monopoly of the commercial media that is portraying the students as outsiders, and nobody says anything, but the students were able to put forward their narrative. The students show all 131 pictures of their faces from their IDs. This form of protest and heroism is most striking because they are young and they are taking on Televisa in this context of state violence. This video was diffused and it started a movement against Televisa, which I am very happy about because this is one of the main problems in the country, the concentration of the media that paralyzes the possibilities of collective action and the possibility of transformation. The young people have begun this protest against the communication institutions that are limiting the freedoms of expression and speech and information. We see the emergence of something very surprising. When we read about these phenomenons, we read them within a global context. First the Arab Spring, then the Indignados of Madrid, then the student movement in Chile in the winter, and then the students this spring. And we read the connections, which might seem like a stretch, but there is a unifying context. Things have emerged via media outlets without a network or organization. They emerge spontaneous, without leaders. Things are decided in assemblies or by organizing over Facebook. I do see this action as very relevant because it's addressing the liberties around communications, which we also saw in Tunis to a certain extent, where they were addressing issues of censorship. Where is the snowball effect going to go next? We don't know, but it is happening during a very polarized electoral climate, a very complex situation. The challenges these students are posing, they are showing the other face of Peña Nieto. They are going much deeper than what the commercial media outlets are distributing.
I think that what happened at the Iberoamericana last week is related to what we were saying about solidarity. Because it's within this radical imagination and this imagining of new possibilities that spontaneous spaces are generated. Because you have much more open space and a much broader network that's not rigid like the Communist Party or something, you know. But it's really more fluid, and that makes it more open to spontaneity. So while it stands as part of a network with other movements and as part of a universalism, it's also very particular and specific. This movement's actions come from a trajectory of irony and laughter. And these actions, you know, that have been generated around Mexico this week are an act of solidarity where they use irony in making fun of the powers. And this helps to unite this universal or global effort with Chile, Tunis, Egypt, you know, but at the same time, it's doing so within Mexico's cultural context of humor. So while it's a movement within a global context, it doesn't completely let go of the local cultural context in which the information is generated, you know, with the goal of a very specific critique.
We're also seeing that while the students from the private universities are revolting, that the students from the public universities are saying, what about us? This aspect of inspiring each other is very interesting to see because first one group emerges, then another against Peña Nieto. This is continuing. Young people are using this approach of satire, irony, and making fun, a very creative cultural production to challenge the state. They are exposing their political context using another angle. This expression is not only very entertaining, but also very Mexican.
Muy divertida, específicamente mexicana y muy, muy, muy divertida.